Here it comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Hey everybody, welcome. You are indeed listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green and another bright green spotlight to put on the Southwest for this next 30 minutes. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and I thank you for listening and for being a part of Mrs. Green's world. Our show today is about a topic I'm going to guess not many of us have heard about, and yet I am so intrigued, and I am so not kidding. We're going to share with you information on From Brown Fields to Green Ones, which I thought was so clever in naming the show, redevelopment done right, and it's really important. But before our guests tell you what that is all about, I want to thank the sponsor of this show and a great partner of Mrs. Green's World, the City of Tucson Environmental Services. Their mission is to promote a healthy community by providing innovative and effective waste management and environmental protection services, which is going to get us to the heart of the matter and will fit in nicely. So I will have to spill the beans a little bit, so to speak, and tell you the mission of the Brown Fields program. This program, the program goals are to promote economic redevelopment and community revitalization in Tucson's Central Business District, Origins Gateway, which I do not even know what that is, and throughout the city limits by identifying, minimizing, and eliminating known contaminants, environmental risks associated with real estate property transactions and alleviating the costs associated with completing environmental due diligence for brownfields properties. That is a mouthful. So I did say it, I think. Please join me in welcoming Kayla Vergone, environmental scientist, and Rolanda Mazika, staff assistant from the City of Tucson. It's great to have you both here.
Thank you for having us.
On this very cool day in the winter, we're all putting on our fur coats. I think it's 80. I said to them, oh, hurry up, come on in, you're freezing. Let's get some blankets. So I have described the mission of the Brown Fields Project, and I'd like you to go into more detail, but the first question I have to ask is, like, who named it? Is it just so obvious that the fields are brown, so they named it the Brown Fields Project?
Well, brownfields, I think, are, when you think about brownfields versus greenfields, a greenfield is a property that has not been developed. We see a lot around here in Tucson. Whereas brownfields are properties that have had some sort of development on them, and usually there's either an environmental impact or a perceived environmental impact on that property.
Got
Thus,
it.
The difference between a brownfields property, which may have some sort of
contaminants or something, some no-no. I think it's extremely clever. I thought, oh, and I started, I'm like, what is this? It sounds like a prep school or something. And I think it's very clever. So let's get into, as I call, down in the weeds and talk about what kind of properties are eligible, and then of course I want to know what kind of contaminants we're talking about, because I'm assuming all contaminants are not created equal, but one should never assume. So what kind of properties are eligible, like people who own houses or they're thinking of building one, or what's the criteria?
Sure. So our program is actually through the EPA.
Yay for the EPA. Yeah. Okay, please. Can we have a little bell here? Yeah, here. The EPA protecting us. Thank you so much. Don't want to get political, but we do need the EPA.
Yes, we do. So it's an EPA program, the properties that are eligible would be commercial properties. Some examples of some types of properties that we usually do work for would be maybe a former automotive business or a gas station, properties that were once dry cleaners, photography studios, really any kind of commercial property could be eligible for a program. We do have some criteria that we have to submit to the EPA, and they kind of do that final decision if it can be funded through brownfields.
So I saw on the list, I mean, it's an extensive list, and obviously I asked the questions based on doing my homework because it's things that I wanted to know about. It makes sense to me about manufacturing plants, mm-hmm. makes sense to me about gas stations, automotive businesses, I'm not sure, junkyard, sure. So what about photography studios and motels and what do they do to make the field brown? Seriously, what's the scoop?
Yeah, with the photography studio, any chemicals that they use for photo processing, a big one would be silver.
So do they go dump it in their backyard? I mean, I'm serious. I'm not trying to pick on anybody, but it's like it's not seeping out their floor.
No. And nowadays, most people are aware of these kind of contaminants, but the properties that we're doing work for usually have this kind of contamination from back in the...
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Okay,
maybe 50,
that's very
60 years ago.
Yeah.
And then something like a hotel, something that we would see there would be asbestos or lead paint.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Didn't think about that. Okay, got it. I'm a big Monterey Court fan down on Miracle Mile, an old motel, mm-hmm. and things have changed since they were built.
Yep.
And I'm sure that, it's a beautiful spot, but it's one of the examples of maybe something, the asbestos was there or whatever. So that's really incredible to me. And what about if, like, I want to look at a property and I know it was right next to the photography studio or the automotive group or the gas station. Are people who are looking at properties like that, are they eligible too?
Yes, absolutely. Part of the environmental work that we would cover is a phase one environmental assessment. And what we do in a phase one is we look at not only the property that someone is interested in purchasing, but we look at the surrounding properties to see if there could be any impacts from those surrounding properties.
Because as we all know, it does rain here and things can leach, mm-hmm. and the contamination is not necessarily confined.
Oh, they don't adhere to property boundaries at all.
That's right. That really contaminated oil didn't know it wasn't supposed to go on that other piece of property over there. It cracks me up when I've done shows on fracking and they say it's contained. And I thought, have you seen the news lately about hurricanes and mudslides, mm-hmm. and how contained can something really be if it's lethal? Here we go. So where does the money come from? All of it from the EPA? You said that, but is it fully funded from the EPA?
Well, for our Brownfields grant that you can see our fact sheet on our website, that money is fully funded by the EPA. We do environmental assessments, the same environmental assessments for City of Tucson properties that we're acquiring. And a lot of times that funding is coming from either the city itself or from other federal agencies like the Federal Transit Administration as well.
So that makes sense. So would you say, and maybe we want to know, no stump the guest here, but who's more interested in getting these properties developed, the commercial real estate property developers, or is it in the city's best interest? It makes sense to me that it's a win-win. So where does the impetus come from, if you know, for these grants being applied for?
Well, as far as the EPA is concerned, it's obviously a win-win for everyone. It's, you know, it can be an economic driver for communities as a whole.
And our city. Right, yep.
Exactly. But also for the developer on their end, the type of assessments that we're doing, the phase one and the phase two, it actually helps them as a property owner to avoid environmental liability. So if they unknowingly purchase a property that has some sort of environmental impact on it, had they not done a phase one or phase two or done their due diligence before acquiring the property, they could actually be held liable for any sort of contamination that they find later on. So it's really in the best interest of everyone involved to take the precautions of doing these type of things. And it's really great that we get to help those businesses out by offering the grant money that we have.
So who does what? So you're the mad scientist, Kayla. Do you help with the science of it, like testing soil contaminants? Tell me about, you know, the nitty-gritty of what happens and what you look for.
Sure. So our Brownfields program has four consultants that we use to actually go out and do the nitty-gritty work. So for my role in this, I manage the consultants that we work with.
Got it.
I oversee the field work and the environmental testing and the reports that come from that.
Got it. So there's a myriad of things. Mm-hmm. What would make a property not, like, you don't want it, you don't want to build on it? Are there times when it absolutely cannot be cleaned up?
I haven't come across that quite yet.
That's a good, honest answer. Is there stuff you can't get out so that you'd say, no, we're never going to build on that, or can it mostly be cleaned up?
Probably for a price.
Yeah, exactly. Right, for money, for amount of money, like take all the dirt out and put new dirt in, that would work.
Absolutely. Yeah. So some projects have an easier fix or a less expensive fix. Our program, we can do the phase one environmental and phase two environmental assessment. But unfortunately, that's all the funding that we can provide. So
what is that? What happens in those phases? I wanted to get into that too.
So the phase one is a kind of like a background search on the site. It will give us a whole history of ownership of what the property was used for, what surrounding properties were used for. And so that kind of, maybe you'll find some red flags. Hey, there's potentially, this used to be a laundromat.
Dry cleaner.
A dry cleaner.
Right. I thought that was fine because maybe they were putting their detergent on the groundwater.
Right. Well, some laundromats were also dry cleaners as well. But so we want to go and look into that a little bit more if maybe some of those chemicals did get into the soil. So that's when we go into the phase two, and that's when we go out there and we take the soil samples and we test and we run for certain contaminants. And at the end of the phase two, we'll know if the soil is clean or if some of the contaminants were in the soil. And that's what our program can, our EPA Brownfields program can fund. And at that point, we provide that to the person who is interested in purchasing the property. And from there, it's back on them for remediation.
So phase one, everybody should get that if they're looking to buy a commercial property.
Yes.
And then if it says, okay, green light, go on to phase two, because would that be like, if you found nothing, they don't have to go to phase two? Like, I really want to know how this works. I think it's fascinating. So if you did the risk assessment one, the environmental site assessment, and they got a clean slate, then they don't have to do phase two?
Yes.
Okay, correct. So, which leads me to the next question. That grant, the initial grant you provide, typical cost is about $2,000, and it's done in about 12 weeks. For the environmental site assessment, $5,000 to $30,000, depending upon the site. Give us an example of like a $5,000 versus a $30,000. That's quite a range.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's a hard question to answer because you could have two sites that had the same historical operation there. You could have two sites that were a gas station, and one could have a phase two that needs its $5,000 and the other one $30,000. It just depends on how many, in this gas, former gas station example, maybe how many underground storage tanks they were operating.
The underground storage tanks, is that a case of where they leaked?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah, that would be a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how you'd know that if it was a slow leak in some cases. That's pretty devastating. Mm-hmm. So that gasoline is just sitting there, what lies beneath.
Exactly. And so depending on what your situation might be, you might need more soil sampling or less.
So I think this is for a city-run project. I want to give kudos because you have completion dates, 12 weeks for one and 10 weeks for another. How do you make sure that happens? That's such a pro-business growth development. Don't tie it up at the city. So how do you do that? Is that your job, Yolanda?
Oh, well...
Are you there as the enforcer?
Well, you know, we're really fortunate in that the consultants that we use understand the timeliness of the work that they do, and that the developers that are conducting this type of assessment work, they're on a tight time frame. You know, it's a lot of time with development. You know, you have to do certain activities in a certain amount of time, or else you start kind of flowing money out everywhere. So we have a great team of consultants on board who understand that we need things done pretty timely. We have a great in-house staff, Kayla, myself, our team lead, who really acknowledge that and make sure that we don't hold up any of the work here when it needs to proceed. And if there's some sort of priority or tight time frame that our developers have, we really do make an extra effort to get that through. And then, of course, our EPA project officer is just phenomenal. And we're really lucky to be able to know what he needs to see to assess the properties that we're submitting for approval. And by just having all our ducks in a row, so to speak, they can pretty much look at what we're submitting and know that we're going to submit a quality project and that they can go forward with the approval.
You know, I don't know, about 2 or 3 months ago, could have been 6 months because time flies when you're having fun, but I wrote a very fact-based newsletter, and it was called What Has the EPA Done for You Lately? And it was absolutely and positively apolitical. And my point was, it doesn't matter how you vote. It matters that your air is clean and that the land you're building on is clean and that our environmental protection is being watched. And I put down some of the biggest projects with incredible impact. I mean, we're talking about saving lives, our lives, because we might not know we're breathing that or walking on it and bringing it to our home. Plants and birds and animals. I mean, this you're talking about all the things that would inhabit a property. So it's, to me, it's like people need to understand that the EPA has such an important role and that it's not political. You cannot absolutely and positively, factually, not accuse the EPA of being political. In the far greenies, you know, the extreme greens, as I call them, they don't think the EPA does enough. So it's not like this heavy-handed, heavy-duty big brother. I mean, they protect my health and yours. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
They're shaking their heads vigorously. That's why I wish we had video too. But it's like, I mean, it's, I think it's important to talk about it because as citizens that listen to this show, and there are thousands of them, let's get our voices heard about protecting the EPA because all of our health will be compromised, especially when upper respiratory disease is the third cause of death in Pima County. We don't want lower standards or nobody watching. It's not Big Brother. It's like, yeah, it might be my Big Brother because he cares about me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So talk about, this is a heavy-duty job, if you ask me, in terms of responsibility for the city, because you really wouldn't want to sell a property that you've been involved in any way or have someone purchase it and have them find out they couldn't build on it, which I know you're not in the real estate business, but tell me about your due diligence, and is it the same for all properties? I mean, can you go, is it just you're looking at the reports? Give me a little more detail on how the due diligence piece works.
So for the due diligence, it really is just these phase one and phase two assessments.
Okay.
That really is your protection as a someone who's going to be purchasing a property. And it follows a standard. So, from All Appropriates Inquiry Act, it's the ASTM standard that we use. And that really, when we use, with our consultants, they do their reports in that format, and it covers all of the bases to protect the purchaser from the law.
Okay, so here's the big question I wanted to ask, too. It's like, oh, mash, I'm going to remember to ask them this. Are there situations where you say to the commercial property grantee, no way, you do not want to build on that property, and they have to walk away? Does that happen or not frequently, or what's your response on that, Madam Scientist?
We really just provide the information, and then the decision would
Got
be made.
It. That's a great question then. Mm-hmm. So they can look at it and decide, mm-hmm. and like, who would want to build on a property that had X on it is what mm-hmm. I think. So I guess there are degrees, right?
Yeah, and one of the other things that we can do for them is a remediation plan. So it would look at look at the property and what kind of contamination we have found there, and estimate how much the different options that they would have to remediate and the different prices that are associated with each option.
So does that come as part of their brownfield grant?
Yeah, it could be covered by our brownfields grant. So far, I have not been a part of one of those projects to see the outcome of if someone chose which remediation options someone would choose. But we can provide that, and that would give them some more information on a price range of remediating the property.
So let's talk about asbestos survey. $3,000, 10 weeks. What are some examples of, is it, I would think like schools, are they covered? Because there's been asbestos in schools. So what kind of buildings in particular could, and I think you mentioned it a little bit, but what kind of buildings, manufacturing plants or just old buildings?
Yeah, really just old buildings. I think the date is 1973.
It's
before
not that old.
Yeah. No, it's not.
I agree.
I was 23, guys. So what if you weren't born? Yeah, but I get it. Because, yeah. I mean, just to think about that, we put asbestos in buildings. It's just nobody was doing it to be mean-spirited. Mm-mm. It was just bad.
It was even in some of the glues and the adhesives for floor tile, for window caulking, not just the traditional insulation that people think of.
Yeah, now we've replaced it with fire retardant and stain retardant mm-hmm. and all these other toxic things you can put in your office and that Mrs. Green knows about. What about lead-based paint? When is the time frame for that? I don't know when they stopped putting lead in paint, but is that the same? What else? Schools, motels are a possibility. What about trailer parks? That's on your list.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. All of those places would have the potential for lead-based paint.
Or even say for like a city project, if we're going to be purchasing perhaps an older property that maybe was even just residential, that could potentially be affected by asbestos or lead-based paint. So it really could be any type of property.
I mean, I'm not kidding. This is such a good thing for all of us and our community and our health. And I, of course, as I said, never heard of it. So is the cleanup planning or the remediation, is that part of they can get $10,000 to $15,000 more to help with the cleanup planning?
Yes. Yep. That's kind of an estimate of how much those plans go for.
Okay. So that's just for the planning, not mm-hmm. the activities.
Nope.
That's on the per. So how much money are we talking about? How much money have you guys gotten?
Our total grant award was in 2014 for $400,000 from the EPA. We split that into two separate smaller grants, so a $200,000 hazardous substances grant and a $200,000 petroleum products grant. So petroleum products would be any sort of gas station kind
right,
of property.
Right.
Hazardous would be our asbestos, lead paint, and dry cleaners.
Okay. One of the things that caught my eye, since I have a background in social services, is job training. It says here that 3.2 million in U.S. Environmental Protection Agency brownfields grants for brownfields redevelopment efforts and job training. Do you still have that?
Unfortunately, we don't have a current job training grant. However, we did. We several years ago, we graduated. I believe it was 12, possibly. Students through our job training grant where they...
Oh, great. What did you train them to do?
They were trained on doing things like asbestos, on doing sampling, on environmental hazards, just a really wide range of activities that are related to environmental assessment type activities. And afterward, a lot of our graduates actually were hired by environmental consulting firms to proceed in the environmental...
It's a specialty.
Yeah, it is.
And it's really great. It's a skill that I'm sure is great for Tucson to have some representation in. So that's too bad that it didn't get funding. Not surprised. What about, do you have examples of what projects worked where you watched and you saw it and promote, these things being ended up being turned into green fields that we would know about?
I think one of the coolest ones is at the Tucson House. It's the Blue Moon Community Gardens.
Yes. You're kidding.
Yep. So that was there was a vacant parking lot that was just to the, I think it's to the
south
of the building. And our program used funding to do the environmental assessments before they built that community garden.
Okay, so that's fun. That's everybody talks about that garden.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's great. So from an EPA hazmat site, just kidding, to healthy growing and greening. I want to go back to the top of the show and ask you, I have lived here 42 years, and I get the Central Business District, got that one down. What do you guys know what Origins Gateway is? Hopefully, since you came here to do this show, what is that?
Well, the Origins Gateway is the area that's on the western side of the downtown area. So if you think of the downtown area, you think of I-10 kind of passing right through.
Right.
On the western edge, going toward A Mountain, you have the Tucson Origins area. I mean, it's exactly what
it's
it sounds
where
like.
Tucson it's where Tucson started. Originated. I got it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh, the light bulb just went on. Okay, I like it. I got it. And throughout the city of Tucson, do you guys actively promote the program? How do people hear about it? And I am really not kidding. I am out and about. It's like when you see me on Facebook, Rolanda, you'll see she's going everywhere. How do people learn about it?
Well, we've been really lucky. The consultants that we work with really help us in identifying projects that have not only meet the requirements of our program, but that also really are going to provide some sort of benefit, either to the public, to the community. So we've been really lucky in finding some really great projects that we've been involved with. If you go through the downtown area, you're going to see numerous...
Booming.
Yes, but also a lot of those you wouldn't recognize as having started as brownfields. And so, you know, our consultants are a large part of the success of our program. We've also been reaching out a little bit more aggressively during this last year of our grant program to the development community, to real estate, to our community leaders, just to let them know about the program and make sure that they pass the word along. Sometimes it is a lot of word of mouth.
Yeah, and that means you have a good reputation if it's passing around like that. And it's not for the, it's more what I call kind of like B2B, business to business, the city to the businesses. It's not a necessarily consumer high level of interest unless you really are an engaged consumer and care about your health and the health of others to know that the city is taking that. So I would like to know, we have a little bit of time left, and I always want to have time to we don't have that much time left. It's always me there. I got the two-minute warning about your backgrounds. What are you a scientist in?
I have my degree in environmental science. So it's soil, water, and environmental science.
From
the University of Arizona.
Yes. She's a wildcat.
But Good answer.
I know. What are you going to say? You went to get your master's at ASU?
No, I got my master's at U of A. But I did start in Pennsylvania at Lehigh.
Well, we like all Pennsylvania schools, as long as it's not ASU. And I'm just kidding. They're a great school. They're doing wonderful things. They're leaders in environmental. I'm just talking about when it comes to basketball. And Rolanda, what about you?
Well, actually, I kind of just really fell more or less into the program. I've worked with the city for over 15 years, doing a variety of different things, and luckily just had the opportunity to work with this program. And
you know, I just have to make a comment, and I wish it was on video. If you look at these two beautiful faces sitting in front of me, you would think it 15 years ago that you were like maybe still in freshman year in high school, Rolanda. Okay. So, and you maybe were not born yet. It's just delightful. And we always want to have a little bit of humor when it comes to Mrs. Green's world. But thank you for the important work you're doing and for being good advocates for the planet and for all of the great content you shared, because it really does matter. And it's a cleaner earth, is a cleaner planet, is a healthier place for all of us. And heaven knows we're quite in a lot of trouble in that regard. February 13th, Kimber Lanning from Local First, Loving Your Local Community. February 15th, Christy Sirocco, Tucson Habitat Store, a home improvement mecca. Please Make it a great green week. And thank you, you two. It was so much fun
so
and
much.
Informative. Thanks, everybody.